the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Well, it's time for the last word on the environment, and John Gibbons is with us in studio. John, great to see you again. Something I think a lot of people would have noticed over the long hot summer we have was not just during the day where we're setting record temperatures nearly day after day, but at night time it was just so warm.
Yeah, good evening, Ian. Yeah, this is research that has just been published this week from Maynooth University and in conjunction with MedEireann, and they looked at the summer of 2025, and it's important probably to say from the outset that obviously we've had hot summers in the past, I think famously 1976 and 1995. Now, the meteorological conditions that made them hot summers were entirely clear and identifiable. What's really strange about the summer of 2025 is that meteorologically it was a very ordinary summer. It shouldn't have been a super hot summer, and I guess that points to the underlying climate signal that has driven up what should have been a fairly unremarkable summer and turned it into a very, very warm summer. Now, the distinct signal of climate change, Ian, can be seen most clearly, not so much in slightly elevated daytime temperatures, which again, that can vary a lot in summertime based on the amount of cloudiness and so on and so forth. The real telltale signature of climate change is elevated nighttime temperatures. That's for two reasons. Number one, of course, the more carbon dioxide we have in the air, the more heat is being trapped. So that daytime heat is not making its way back into the atmosphere at night. So what people experience this as these muggy, sticky, clammy nights. Very, very uncomfortable. And that's what we saw particularly this summer.
Yeah, and I think the sad thing about it, this is here to stay, so that we're not going to get, a nice warm sunny day and then it all dissipates at nighttime and it cools all our homes down. It's here to stay this way.
That's right. And I suppose another way of thinking about this, the summer of 2025 may have been the hottest summer ever recorded in Ireland, but it's likely to be one of the coolest summers that will ever occur in the future in Ireland. That's just simple, basic physics as to how that works. We know, for example, that with the additional climate warming, this should have been a once in a 600-year event, right? But instead, it turned out to be a once in a 15-year event. Now, that's at our current level of warming, which is between 1 and 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial. Now, the scientists looking at this are warning that, as temperatures head out, for example, to increase by 2 degrees globally, we can expect this, the type of summer we've just had, to become a 1 in 5 year occurrence. And when we get to around the 3 degree mark, we're looking at essentially this every other summer and being like this. But in reality, they're likely to be far hotter. A second factor, by the way, of course, that drove up nighttime temperatures in summer this year was the very high sea surface temperatures around the coast of Ireland. Basically, that kind of relieving onshore winds were not drawing away the heat.
Yeah, and the upshot of this for people, the practical implications are our homes are simply not built for this. They're not built for during the day when it's like this, and they're certainly not built for it at night time.
True. One thing I will say, and I do like to put in the odd little bit of positive news, is that over the last 15 years or so, all the new builds in Ireland, both apartments and houses, are built to an A-rated standard. Now, people often, when you hear that, they say, oh, great, that's good at keeping in the heat, which, of course, it is. But the other thing about high levels of insulation, Ian, is that they're also good at stopping houses overheating, because the insulation barrier stops, for example, the inundation of heat from the outside. So building homes well, building homes, A-rated homes, is actually really helpful during the summer as well. It's not the cure-all, but it certainly helps. A badly insulated home, for example, is cold in the winter, we know that, but it also overheats drastically in the summer. And that's something, yet another good reason to push for more and more of our homes to be insulated. Of course, we're building new homes properly insulated, but we need to get cracking on the retrofitting program.
But there are so many people that can't afford the retrofitting, and it is particularly, and I've looked at this from some of the homes that are built in this country, there's an awful lot, and we had figures from the CSO, there's some of them that are F-rated.
Yeah, we have a huge problem with we've about a million homes, Ian, that it's reckoned that are badly in need of retrofitting. Many of these, of course, are one-off houses in rural areas, and they're not only are they difficult to retrofit and expensive, but they're currently being heated by either oil or solid fuel. So they tend to have the absolute worst emissions profile. trial. I think there's a strong case. There's a couple of things to say here. There's a strong case, obviously, to get the retrofitting. It's very expensive. I think one of the suggestions which has been discussed about this is to have a, instead of asking a homeowner to borrow maybe 50 or 100 grand to do this, which is a huge charge, a good idea instead would be to have a charge that the government pays all of your retrofitting up front, and they take them, they get the money back in maybe over a 50 to an 80 year period in the form of a charge against the deeds on your house. In other words, you might benefit for the next 10 years, but everyone who lives in that home for the next century will benefit. So why not sort of tap out the costs over the duration of the benefit?
Or even, look, for people out there, even just borrowing at the current interest rates for retrofitting, it's just not practical.
Yeah.
And as you said, look, and I live by the coast, as you know, and even opening the windows is not helping.
Yeah, that's right. So I think, as I say, properly insulated houses, our homes are a huge start. They're definitely take us down that route. We know, of course, at the moment, for example, many people are using heat pumps to keep their homes warm. There's a version of heat pump, there's not many of them in Ireland, that essentially can be reversed, Ian, in the summertime to blast cold air into your house using exactly the same technology. It's a reverse refrigerator. So imagine a situation where the heat pump keeps you warm in the winter and keeps you cool in the summer. Now that's smart.
Yeah. Let's move on. And you mentioned oceans there, but there has been another report this week looking at the health check of the world's oceans.
That's right. This comes from a group based in Copenhagen, and they have been monitoring over the last decade or 15 years what they call the nine critical planetary boundaries. And what they've identified this year in particular is that finally the world's oceans have breached one of those planetary boundaries. Now, what they're saying in this regard is that ocean acidification has increased versus pre-industrial by about 30 to 40%. So the oceans are now far more acidic than they were 100, 150 years ago. Now, that has impacts all over the place. And of course, the first question to ask, of course, Ian, is why are the oceans more acidic? The oceans are pulling down excess carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. And when they do that, that is converted in the ocean into what's called carbonic acid. And that is acidifying the ocean, the ocean water. And of course, think of how much carbon dioxide needs to be drawn down. And of course, the carbon dioxide that's drawn down in the oceans is our friend, because of course that's carbon dioxide that would otherwise be making the atmosphere even hotter. But the problem is that same carbon dioxide that's being released as a result of the burning of fossil fuels primarily is acidifying the ocean, and that in turn is having catastrophic effects on the marine food chain. So think of the creatures, the small creatures down at the base of the food chain. They need calcium carbonate to form their shells, even at the very minute level. And essentially, the acidified water means that their shells will dissolve, right? So essentially, the acidic nature of the world's oceans has become hostile to the crustaceans in particular, which form such a huge part of the marine food chain. Now, to go back briefly, if I might, to this planetary boundary, this is number 7 of 9. So what the scientists are saying is that so far, of the 9 boundaries, we have breached climate change, land system change, freshwater use, biogeochemical flows, novel entities, and now ocean acidification. So that means 7 of our 9 critical global ecological and geophysical boundaries have been breached. Now, that doesn't mean there's no way back, but what it means is, this is the equivalent, Ian, if I can put it this way, if you were in ICU, your doctor would be saying, you know, you've got major problems with your heart, with your lungs, with your liver, with your kidneys. These are your critical systems. So similarly, earth systems, these critical systems that everything depends on, 7 of the 9 systems upon which all life on earth depends are flashing red. Now, it's the most profound global emergency. It's really difficult to overstate, but I'll do my best.
Excuse me, John, I know from your book, I know you have views on farming and agriculture, and one solution for people out there who own land would be to put a load of solar panels on them to make money. But that, of course, takes the land out of use. But you think there's a possible way that farmers could have it both ways?
Yeah, this is really interesting research, Ian, and I'm really pleased to share it. And I have to say, this is absolutely news to me. This is research being done out of Aarhus University in Denmark. And what they've discovered is that by using vertical solar panels, panels. So they lay them out in the fields alongside crops. So from a distance, they almost look like sort of very thin hedgerows. So they're standing vertically. Now, you might say, hang on, aren't solar panels meant to be flat to catch the sun? Yeah, that's great for catching the midday sun. But what they find with vertical panels is they catch the morning sun and they catch the late afternoon sun. And peak demand for electricity tends to be in the morning and the late afternoon. We don't have massive demand. So while the overall productivity of solar from vertical panels is lower, we're getting the power being delivered when we need it. But most importantly, 90% of the farmland involved here is still available for traditional cropping. And what they also found, which is really good news, is that it had almost no impact on the productivity of, for example, wheat and grass-clover mixtures. And in fact, Ian, they found a slight benefit for the crops is that the solar panels, the vertical panels, formed a shelter, a wind shelter. So they found it was like a sort of an artificial hedgerow that gave some protection to crops. So overall, what it means is we should be able to squeeze more and more solar PV into our farmlands without displacing, with almost minimal displacement of agriculture. But I would say, if I might, even if using traditional flat solar panels, and if we reached our full 2030 targets in Ireland, it would only require about 2.5% of our existing farmland, round about the level that we have currently covered in golf clubs. So I think, you know, I don't think we're going to be converting rural Ireland into an industrial grey zone.
No, but it actually might stop some of the people who object to
That's why I'm so in favour of this, because you're absolutely right. People have this kind of nostalgic idea about what a field should look like. So if this helps to mollify the objectors, I think it's fantastic.
Now, something that I pay a tiny bit of attention to, because it is important from a business story wise, but it's also important for our environmental targets, and that is getting more offshore energy and onshore energy. And there was some big news this week from the government.
That's right. What we got from this week was the announcement of the latest results from what's called the RESS. This is essentially an auction, a government-based auctioning system for renewable energy. So in this auction system, round about 1.5 gigawatts of new energy was approved. Most of it, by the way, from solar, right? Which is really, really good news. Now, to translate 1.5 gigawatts into, you know, what's that in old money? That's roughly the equivalent power used by about 1/3 of 1 million Irish households. So this is a lot of new juice coming onto the grid. Now, of course, we know that the sun doesn't shine at night, and we know that the wind doesn't blow 24/7. So obviously these have to be supported with robust storage systems, whether it's battery or whether it's other forms of storage which are becoming available. But the key thing is the one area where we need to grossly overproduce in energy, in our economy, let's say, is in energy production. There's essentially an insatiable demand for energy. Ian, as you well know, the problem is at the moment that energy demand is being serviced by fossil fuels that are destroying the climate, wrecking our ecosystems, acidifying the ocean, and basically just destroying our children's future. So we've got to get smart. We've got to pivot drastically to renewables. And the great thing, of course, is Ireland doesn't produce fossil fuels, but hey, we have an excellent wind resource in Ireland, a domestic wind resource, and increasingly we have a superb solar resource.
Yeah, and it should be said, in one of those previous auctions, there was nobody taking up the government scheme, so it is worthwhile noting that something positive happened there for change. John Gibbons, thank you very much for joining us.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.